This is Art Moves. Art Moves is a series of curated conversations at the intersection of art, innovation, and social justice.
Each week we'll be talking with the innovative thinkers and doers who are forging new ground in the creative arts or redefining what it means to be creative.
I'm Tony Williams.
And I'm Eli Kislansky.
And we're your host for Art Moves. Today we'll be talking with the executive director of the Asian American Artists Alliance, also known as A4, Lisa Gold. Lisa will speak to us about how A4 has rallied to confront issues related to the violence and bias in the Asian American community by leaning into cultural stories and heightening public awareness on this episode of Art Moves. So thank you so much for coming, Lisa. We're just looking forward to talking to you about all things art.
Thanks so much for inviting me. So A4 was started 38 years ago by a group of Asian American activists who believed in advancing Asian American opportunities and equity. There was a time where, much like today, Asian Americans were pigeonholed. It was hard for them to get roles on Broadway or on TV. Opportunities weren't as prevalent. And
it sounds familiar.
Exactly. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? Yeah. So it was, they were activist artists at a time, taking a page out of the civil rights movement, where recognizing that artists needed to come together to support their community.
When was this started? What year?
19. Oh my God, I was thinking 30.
Around.
30. I should know this off the top of my head, and I don't know why.
Right. 38 years ago. 2021.
Yeah. Let me see the math. I don't know. Yeah. Can we edit that out? I should know the math, but I don't know why I'm having a hard time today.
Can I ask you about this whole idea of activism and art, because it is echoing so much these days, the role that artists play in community change?
Yeah. I mean, it starts with representation, but it goes way beyond that. If you can't see yourself, you can't imagine what you can be. So, there are artists, even today, you turn on the TV and you see a TV show and the cast, there are no Asian Americans in the cast. You see a movie. I mean, there was just a recent report released by AIPAC showing the lack of representation on Broadway and in theaters of Asian Americans. And I think artists they show us ourselves. They show us what can be. They show us possibilities. They teach us new ways of being in the world. And I think artists are really powerful in connecting in ways, and not just through, visual art or words or music. It all comes together, and they can really, they can affect people and move people and have people see things in ways that your typical maybe politicians or traditional activists may not be able to affect that kind of change and that heart, that feeling that makes people want to really engage and participate.
You mentioned the lack of seeing Asian Americans on Broadway and television, being just represented. Could you elaborate on that?
Yeah, again, it speaks to that lack of representation and that we don't matter, that our voice doesn't matter, our voice isn't heard. Our stories don't matter, that we're not part of American history or culture. And when your history and your culture is erased like that, how do you feel valued? How do you feel like an important contributing member of society? So I think that artists in particular feel very strongly, about representation and equity. And I think also there's been a lot of, pitting minorities against each other, holding Asian Americans up as the model minority. They don't make any noise. They don't say anything. And that is obviously a problem. And it is nothing that is going to help advance the causes of all BIPOC people when you divide and conquer.
Well, we have to be a lot more aware. Eli, I think you wanted to say something now.
Oh, no, I was reading about Avatar, Earthbender, which is a wonderful kids cartoon, in Asia. And they cast the movie for it. Terrible movie, got terrible reviews. And there wasn't any Asians in the leading role, even though it took place in Asia.
Right.
So, there it is. I think there's also
Ghost in the Shell. There's a ton of movies. We recently, for Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, we did an event called Asian Americans in Jeopardy, and it was a Jeopardy-style game show. And one of the categories was whitewashed, and all of the answers in the Jeopardy game were roles that were played by white actors instead of Asian Americans.
You know, this brings up so many issues, because right now we're going through a racial reckoning. And you mentioned that sometimes, you know, Asian Americans are used kind of, I guess, as a wedge issue.
Yeah.
And let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that's something that perhaps artists can confront. You know, the idea that people of color are pitted against each other, which is so unproductive for everyone. But could you speak on that?
There's so many levels to that. Again, thinking about just how wrong it is. I mean, like I said, on a lot of levels, but just factually incorrect. I mean, they talk about, you know, Asian Americans as like this highly educated, very wealthy kind of minority population, and why can't everybody else be like that? When the truth is, when you actually disaggregate data and you look at education levels, Indian Americans have a very high level of college degrees.
Yes.
But Hmong, maybe, I think it's about 70%, but Hmong and Cambodian Americans are at about 5%. The same thing is with income. There is the largest disparity in income across the Asian American population. So lumping people together like that, first of all, I mean, obviously there are issues with the term Asian American in and of itself, but again, I think it is used as a way to keep other people down, to lift up. I'm using quotes.
And also, it's the monolith piece. I mean, when we're speaking about Asian Americans, who are we really speaking about? There's a number of, I guess, nationalities in that.
Oh, even within nationalities, there's also breakdowns, too. You know?
Right.
So let's talk about some of the work that the artists have done in this whole area of Asian American bias, because I know that there's social justice work that you're doing, and if you could just share with us some of that work and how you've been at the forefront in some respects in this work.
Yeah, there are so many artists doing just really incredible projects, artists in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement last summer. We have an event that we do every other month called Town Hall, and we bring together artists, arts organizations, people that just want to learn about what's happening in the creative community, and they pitch ideas, and we usually have like a featured presenter or two. And we did one last summer, Artists in Solidarity with Justice Movement, and we featured two artists who were doing incredible projects. One of the artists that we're working with right now, her name is Betty Yu, and she's part of Chinatown Art Brigade, and she has a project where she is collecting immigrant stories and projecting them on a public space in Flushing Town Hall again. Showing the visibility and giving power to those stories and to those voices.
So when you say projection, you mean like projection mapping onto the building itself?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And these, what's the imagery on that?
It's images
of text or images.
Yeah, text and images that just regular people have shared with us. So she poses questions about, you know, what does it mean to you? Have you ever faced bias? What's your immigration history? You know, what would you like to share? And so when artists I don't know why I keep saying artists. I have artists on my mind.
Activists?
No, they're just stories of like regular Americans. Yeah, like people on the street sharing stories about their history.
Right. Well, I call those storytellers.
Yeah.
Because
you know,
I can tell a ton of stories, and this one over here, Eli, he's got. If you want stories?
Actually, it reminds me of a certain
American. I'm still into this social justice.
Well,
go ahead.
I was curious something you said. Just a little bit about the process. So when you say she gathers stories, does she like, you know, buttonhole people in the street, like man in the street interviews, or she does it online or both, or
so
what kind of images?
It's a combination. We'll set up a table and advertise it in advance. We've done it at community festivals. We just did an event in front of Flushing Town Hall last weekend, the weekend before that, and there are questions, there are prompts that we stop people on the street and we ask them that, or we tell them that, you know, in advance that we're going to be there, and they can bring artifacts or mementos, photographs, if they want to share those, and Betty photographs those and weaves it into a video that she'll share.
Yeah, it's kind of like an oral history.
Yeah,
in
exactly.
A lot of respects, you know.
Exactly.
I was thinking of, you know, artists or activists, how do artists deal with assimilation? Because when I hear about stories or comments related to feeling invisible, underrepresented. You know, the idea is everybody wants to assimilate into this American culture, but do we really? You know, how do you tackle that kind of issue around assimilation and how we should all be happy to be able to assimilate when the truth of the matter is, at least from my perspective, we should all be able to celebrate our own cultures and feel like we can bring our authentic selves to whatever work we're doing or to our lives in general?
Well, I think, again, you know, the term Asian American is mm-hmm. very broad.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that there are South Asians, Southeast Asians, East Asians, Central Asians. Not everybody has the same opportunity, certainly not in terms of income, language access. I mean, as we've seen, like what happened in Elmhurst, you know, last summer with the COVID epidemic. I mean, Asian American communities were hit incredibly hard. Chinatowns, even before the city shut down, people were shunning businesses, and just the bankruptcy rates and the closure of businesses that these communities face is devastating. Not to mention, you know, the loss of life and the disproportionate number of healthcare workers, especially among Southeast Asian Americans. Number of nurses, it hit our community incredibly hard. So, I mean, assimilation is a very tricky thing. I know when I was growing up, yeah, I mean, I was told to fit in and, you know.
The old melting pot.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And there were, you know, my food was weird. Kimchi smelled bad. You know, there was all of that.
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM. We're talking to Lisa Gohl about A4 and their efforts to confront violence and bias in Asian American communities.
So I'd love to ask about the impact that, if any, that the pandemic and also the recent rise in racism and intolerance has on people's work. Have you seen like some artists who've made major shifts in their work, or is it in general overall? Is it specific artists, more ones who are involved in activism?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of considerations. I mean, it's heartbreaking to hear the stories that I hear of dancers and gallerists and just, you know, regular people facing like physical violence and intimidation. It's almost unfathomable. It's terrible that, you know, this is something that people have to contend with before they leave the house. I mean, before we start doing in-person programming again, it's not just COVID that we have to think about. We have to think about people's mental health and their safety. You know, we've done a number of programs over the past year, you know, story circles where people could come together in a very safe space and share issues, their concerns about violence and racial discrimination. We did a panel, I think it was in May of last year, about how to protect yourself.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
We had a lawyer. We had somebody from the mayor's office on hate crimes. We had a psychiatrist talking about that. And sadly, that, I think, was like the best attended program or viewed that we had all year.
Do you think it's getting better with some of the legislation that is now being passed in Congress? And do you think that, or... That's just a question. Is it getting better?
I don't know,
mm-hmm.
honestly. I mean, from what I see in my social media feeds and the news articles that I read, I mean, I see something every day, mm-hmm. an act of violence against someone in this community. And it's hard to say that it's getting better. It might be. I am trying to remain optimistic and think that, you know.
What's fueling this? I want to hear from you, though. I have my ideas, but you're the guest, so we want to hear. What do you think is fueling all this hatred? I'm getting tired of this hatred.
I like that. Who's fueling it?
Who and the what, right?
I mean, I think there's a lot of disinformation being spread
mm-hmm.
on social media. I think that people get their information in very segmented ways. We're in our own echo chambers. I think, like you said earlier, Asian Americans were pitted against
other people of color.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the statistics are showing, like, in the actual hate crimes inflicted upon Asian Americans, like the vast majority are by white people, not by other people of color. And I think that is a narrative that the media is spinning again.
Absolutely, I agree with you.
To pit us against each other.
Mm-hmm. When I see something in the media, it's usually some black person beating up on an Asian person. That's what I see. And I'm like, is that really accurate? Or are they just once again
using that to pit people against each other, so we won't look at what the real issues are around here, you know? But what's going on that's really exciting you, though? Because, you know, we're going to have this tension's going to be with us for some time, as I see it. So what's going on at A4 that you just are just so proud of and that you're looking forward to?
I mean, I'm so proud of our artists that are just doing, like, incredible projects. I am excited about a residency program. We started a virtual residency program last year, and we're looking to do that with another BIPOC organization in the fall to really build, you know, cross-cultural community understanding and have artists really work closely together. We have, we have so many programs, I can't even, like, keep track of everything right now.
We can get people to look at your website, right?
Yeah. You know, and we have another town hall coming up in July. We have a number of great programs that we're looking forward to supporting artists who are working together with social justice projects. To go back, like, some of the artists that have participated in some of our town halls around advocacy and around social justice movements, for freedoms. So we had, you know, artists talking about projects that they're doing across the country, you know, to bring people together. Amaya Okamoto, who is working with creating graphics and working on the ground in Oakland, California with Black Lives Matter movement. Jess McLeod, who worked with Asian Artists for Black Lives. So there were a number of artists bringing different aspects of visual arts, theater, all sorts of, you know, different disciplines in media to their work. Also, artists who advocate for their communities. Artist Solidarity Fund that was started by Jimenica Garnica at LeMay Dance Project, among other people, but she was like a driving force. And that was getting artists and arts organizations together to fund micro grants to support artists. So, you know, activism takes a lot of different forms. And, these community mutual aid networks are really critical right now, and have been, you know, over the past year, offering support to communities. So I think that's an important aspect of activism as well, community health and engagement.
Yeah, I was reading about the Renaissance, the first Renaissance, and about the influence that the bubonic plague, the pandemic, then happened on society. And it was because of the bubonic plague that the church's grip on society lessened, allowed individualism and secularism to come to the forefront, which laid the ground for the first Renaissance. So in some ways, I wonder if we're not seeing some dynamic like this, or some kind of emerging trends. I mean, do you see any emerging trends that you see in art?
You're talking about the church's grip, once the church let go a little bit.
Well, it has no choice, the society is decimated.
Right.
So that before, they would never allow individualism or secularism or anything to. And that's what you needed as a fertile ground to the kind of expressions that, for example, paintings may not be just about religious things or something. So
yeah, I think that there's a lot of tectonic shifts in the landscape. Artists taking back power, re-examining institutional power and their relationships to that. I mean, you look what's happening at MoMA right now. I think that's fascinating. I think that, a couple of blocks from here, Amanda Thing Bodipakia, she does, I think it's Amanda, an artist with a long last name or something, her actual website.
I'm very
impressed.
She has
that beautiful mural, about we belong here. And so Lincoln Center, she's got a ginormous mural up right now in front of Lincoln Center. And to see Lincoln Center put something like that up on the Coke Theater is almost unheard of.
Because it's interesting because people may know what's happening in MoMA. You refer to it.
I wish I knew the name. I should look up. I don't want to get it wrong. The name of the actual movement, but it's like decolonizing the museum.
That's going to take some work. You'll see decolonizing the museums when you see decolonizing the people that work for these museums. Meaning, I really feel that the diversity needs to really start to be a priority. This whole diversity, equity, inclusion, and access, art and culture is where it all begins. So let's start there with that kind of appreciation and with that ethic, But you were saying, though.
Yeah.
You're the guest, not...
Yeah, we know what
we're
going to
say.
But
I agree with you. I agree with you. You know?
It's
everything. You know, artists questioning, you know, what does it mean to work in an institution that takes money from, you know, a wealthy patron who supports making tear gas that is, you know, impacting our communities disproportionately? What does it mean, you know, to work in an institution like that? How can we continue to practice art while questioning the values of this system?
You're listening to Art Moves on WNYE 91.5 FM.
We're speaking with Lisa Goh about her work with the Asian American Artists Alliance, also known as A4. You know what I'm afraid of? You know, I'm afraid after this pandemic, we'll squander all that we learned through the pandemic, which is the idea that we all have a place here and we all deserve opportunity, you know, that this, that white supremacy, that right now we're confronting it. We're all confronting what this means. But what happens a year from now? Are we going to go back to business as usual? That concerns me a lot.
I hear you.
That's why I do this show, because
yeah.
we have to speak power to this. We have to speak up about these things, right?
Yeah. I mean, I like to be optimistic.
Absolutely.
I like to think that the work that we've been doing over the past year and a half, or past more than that, just thinking about sowing the seeds and the idea of racial equity and the shift that is happening, you know, from the Ford Foundation down to, like, you know, to smaller organizations that are looking to, you know, rethink who their leaders are. What does that look like on the ground? That who represents us? Who is that voice? So, I do see huge changes there. I think I see much slower changes within some of those institutions. You know, there's still whatever glacial pace. I shouldn't say that anymore because with global warming, things are like melting very quickly. So maybe I should be. But I would like to think that, you know, people are more aware now. People are making efforts. That there are there are shifts that we that are impossible to reverse.
Right?
Absolutely.
A lot with young folks and the way that they approach and interact with each other. I think it's far more authentic. At least I hope I'm seeing what's correct. Far more authentic and interested.
Absolutely.
And respectful.
The genie's not going back in the bottle. I mean, because the demographics are not going to be the same.
Absolutely.
You know, you have also what they call true digital natives, you know, a generation that was totally born in a digital world. It's interesting. A couple of years ago, I heard this guy, Don Marinelli, who was one of the starters of ETC, Electronic Technology and something, at Carnegie Mellon. It was one of the first, you know, multimedia departments inside Carnegie Mellon. And he was talking about Generation Z, did a presentation on it. It's totally fascinating without going through the whole thing, but, you know, they really view the world totally different than different other generations, you know, not just corporally, you know, the human body, but also digitally and virtually, 24/7, lifelong learners, are interested in going to stores. I mean, you know, that's the total cultural shift. That's not going back. The other thing that they do, that they say is that they have not going to wait for change. You know, I think that's huge in and of itself.
Not going to wait for change.
Yeah,
be the change that you want to be.
And also the
change.
You know, the population is going to shift. It's no longer going to be a dominance of a certain group.
Yeah, that's
it. It might dominate
people.
The power structures and the banks and other stuff for the moment. But this is why they're so frantic to do other stuff, because time is not on their side. And they think it's going to work. That's the funny part about it.
Well, I like that time is not on their side.
Well, it's not. 2050, you'll be, you know, whites will be in the minority.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, it's like, wait, they're doing voters. You know, they're fearful. It's a weak position to go from, even though they're a strong position because they're controlled so much. But it's the power of people of color that they're terrified of.
Yeah.
And they're powerful. That's why, otherwise, if they weren't powerful, they wouldn't do anything. You don't have to worry about it. That's the funny dichotomy about it.
It's true. You gave me something to think about.
Oh, okay. Late night phone calls. That was wrong with you.
Lisa, tell us a bit about yourself. I want to, you know, I've been reading about you. You were at the Drawing Center for a while. That kind of talk to us about your your passion for art and why you're in this field.
Yeah, I've always loved art. My mother was a painter, and I It's just something that I grew up always making things. I'm still a bit of a crafty Kathy. I like to make things, but I am not that talented to make a living at it. I'm much better with a spreadsheet. But I believe in the power of artists so much, what they do, again, like how they affect the way we see the world. And I can't imagine, you know, life without music and dance and all of these things. So I have been in the nonprofit arts for a couple of decades now. As you said, I worked at the Drawing Center. I worked at Socrates Sculpture Park, worked with Apex Art. I was in Washington, D.C. at Washington Project for the Arts and the Hirshhorn Museum. I've been involved in a number of different volunteer capacities. Primarily, my work has been in the visual arts, contemporary visual arts, but also performance art. And what I love about A4 is that it encompasses all disciplines from, you know, theater, podcasting, comedy, design, fashion. It's great. So, you know, again, I'm a big believer and proponent of the creative folks among us making our society a better place.
Are you seeing more multidisciplinary work now?
Oh, totally, completely.
Can you give some examples? Like,
yeah, I mean, there was just like a beautiful piece, and speaking of Brett Lehman, at the Noguchi Museum with artist Brendan Fernandez, who had choreographed this incredible piece, dancer choreographer around the Noguchi sculpture, you know, inspired by Noguchi. And I just, you know, I see a lot of that, artists working in multi-disciplines where, you know, it's narrative, documentary, film, like actual physical objects, architecture and dance, all of that coming together. Yeah.
Do you think we value art enough in this society?
Well, I hope so. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes and no. I mean, after last year when we couldn't go to concerts and we couldn't, you know, we couldn't go to Broadway. I mean, people were really bemoaning the loss of that. And I think maybe sometimes when you don't have it, you recognize how important it is. But, you know, the thing about art is that, you know, sometimes people have this idea, it's this grand notion of an oil painting of a, you know, a seascape in the National Gallery. And that's not necessarily what it is. And, you know, I think about like the cowboy poetry that the NEA funds and how art impacts small communities all across the country in many different ways. And everybody has a personal connection to it, whether it's the quilts of G's Bend or whether it is, you know, a massive concert at Shea Stadium or something. Like, people can connect in ways that are valuable and meaningful and personal to them. So, you know, if you ask people individually, does art matter? I think they say yes. But, you know, when you think of art with a capital A, maybe they have like a different relationship to it.
It's so funny because we're going to have to wrap, but I would say I work in a steam mill, and I just wish we had artists that work there.
Steam.
But, you know, the artists, because I feel that artists really think out of the box, you know, and I just think that in this country in particular, how do artists earn livings, you know? I mean, it's those kinds of things. How do we support artists? How do we keep art, how do we ignite it? How do we keep it alive? Those are the kinds of questions I have.
I think also how we shift their perception of them and also the value that they have for society.
Exactly,
right?
Shifting the perception of how we think about artists. But unfortunately, you know, that's all the time that we have for this rather fun, interesting, and quirky episode. So, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. You were wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Art Moves is co-produced by Brick Arts Media and pre-recorded at Brick Studio in downtown Brooklyn.
This has been Art Moves with your hosts, Tony Williams and Eli Kuzlansky. Find some art that moves you and share it with someone.